Hello, Melissa.
Oh, Jamie, it's been so long.
It's been so long. This is the Frogs World Podcast. And that's a familiar sound for all of you listening with your ears. Welcome back. After a far too long hiatus, to quote Sam Ellinger post-Sugar Bowl, Melissa, we're back.
And much like Sam Ellinger in a meaningful game, we had to have a trial run too.
It's true. I fumbled on the goal line and my audio didn't record. So this is actually take two of the first Frogs War episode in quite some time.
But that means because we're good. We're sharp.
We shook off the rust, stretched. We know what we're talking about now. Everything's going to be great from here. So we are, of course, Jamie Plunkett and Melissa Treewasser, your friendly managing editors over at frogswar.com. And we are back after what, like a year and a half of not podcasting because, you know, thanks pandemic and other things related to said pandemic. But it is, this is not an impromptu thing because realignment news broke this week. This was a planned resurrection of your beloved podcast. So here we are.
Yeah. And it just happens that we will have a lot of breaking-ish news to talk about today.
The podcast gods knew that we were going to need content for this first time back. And so instead of, you know, like a full TCU football preview, we're actually going to push that to a later episode to talk about some Olympic news and obviously realignment. But before we get into either of those things, Melissa, I think it would behoove us to look into the past just a little bit and talk about the year that it has been for TCU athletics up until this point, including last football season and obviously all of the spring sports that have had some significant success.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that some people feel like TCU lives and dies by football. And while there were certainly highlights throughout the football season that we'll touch on later, a lot of other sports had really, really great years in the midst of the chaos that surrounded us, you know, in the world. And so I thought it would be fun just to kind of touch on our favorite games of the year and some of the individual athlete performances that we are most impressed by. So do you want to start with your favorite athlete? Because I think it leads well into my favorite game.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about Emily Alvarado and the incredible year that TCU's goalie had on the soccer team. Obviously, she was a senior leader on the team, took that team all the way to the Elite Eight. She was an all-academic Big 12 member as well. She tweeted out when that got announced something like, "See, I did study in college," which I thought was
pretty funny. And academic All-American, too.
First yes.
First soccer player in history to make the All-American squad.
Absolute record breaker, incredible soccer star. Obviously, she represents her home country, Mexico, on the national team. She just signed to play professionally as well. So she has got a bright, bright future in the sport of soccer. But beyond soccer, Emily is just, and you've got to meet her a few times, she's just a genuinely good human being. And, you know, she is that kind of kid that you are proud is wearing the TCU letters across her shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. And she signed with a French professional team. And for women's soccer, the French League is one of the top in the world. So it's an awesome opportunity for her. We're really just getting to see just the very tip of the iceberg for what I think Emily is going to accomplish on the global stage. So she did also accomplish a lot in Fort Worth. She helped TCU as one of the premier goalkeepers in the country, one of the premier defensive presences, and led TCU soccer to never before seen heights. And her performance against West Virginia in the de facto Big 12 championship game last fall was part of the reason that I found that to be one of my favorite sporting events of the year. In the midst of all the chaos and, you know, not having fans in the stands or having limited fans in the stands, to get that game in, I think it was early November, mid-November, and not a COVID-friendly packed stadium, but a packed stadium nonetheless, in front of a supporting a team. You know, TCU soccer's home field advantage has been one of the best in the country, even for such a small school, and it really rallied people in Fort Worth to get on their side, and watching them complete an undefeated Big 12 run in the fall and to secure a Big 12 championship and to really jumpstart their spring that would end in the Elite Eight of the national championship. That was a really special experience, just to feel the energy and the excitement of big time college athletics when that had been something that had been lacking for so many of us for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. Just an incredible, incredible game at the right time for TCU fans. Just a kind of a trumpeting of where Eric Bell has taken this program. It's just really, really cool to see.
A pretty unbelievable, we have some unbelievable leaders at TCU in the athletics department, from the head coach and assistant coaches. Everyone talks about Patterson, obviously, and Jim Schlossnagel, and now Kirk Charlews and Jamie Dixon, but Eric Bell and Reagan Peebly and Jill Kramer, I think, have done just excellent jobs of not just, having success on the fields and on the courts, but really building programs that embody that spirit of 40 not 4 that Gary Patterson has really tried to spread across the entire TCU campus. And I think that they're doing their part to help these students be prepared for life on and off the field, and to deal with all of the tough things that have come their way, especially in the last 16 months or so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to feel confident about the state of TCU athletics just by looking across the board at all of the coaches that are in place right now.
Sure.
You've got to feel good about it from top to bottom.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think for me, the game of the year for me is, going back to Austin, Texas, and TCU football coming down to the wire, kind of a by the grace of God situation. Keontae Ingram fumbling the football on the 2-yard line that would have given Texas the lead with just a few seconds left in the football game. But TCU recovers. Garrett Wallow strips him of that football, and Max Duggan runs out the back of the end zone. The Frogs win 33-31. It is always good to beat Texas. People say that that's a little brother mentality or whatever it is. No, TCU 7-2 against Texas since they joined the Big 12. You tell me who the little brother is in that relationship. But it's just always good to go down to Austin and get a win. And to do it in that fashion, to kind of put one more nail in Tom Herman's coffin down there after we, I think you said this, I said this, a lot of TCU fans said this when Herman was hired. His resume looked a lot like Charlie Strong's, and his time at Texas ended a lot like Charlie's did as well.
And Steve a lot of Sarkisian's isn't much different, but
we'll let them figure that out on their own, Melissa. We'll let them figure that out on their own.
You know, that was it's hard to say that that wasn't the single stupidest football game I've ever been in attendance for.
Yeah.
I mean, just the 14 penalties in the first quarter ending on a called safety, but still a weirdly executed safety. Just a really stupid way for TCU to hang another L down on the Longhorn. And I loved every second of it.
Weirdly executed is the perfect phrase to define TCU football in 2020.
Yeah.
So, that's exactly right. But speaking of TCU football, why don't you go ahead and tell us who your kind of featured athlete was for TCU?
Yeah, there were a lot of great players. I think of women's basketball and Lauren Hurd and Michelle Berry and the leadership that they showed. And obviously Emily and Yasmin Ryan over in soccer and baseball. You know, we could talk about the leadership of Zach Humphries or the future stardom of Braden Taylor, but there are a few Mount Rushmore human beings for guys I've gotten to cover TCU football, and Trayvon Merrig is right up there near the top. Just an incredible player, just racked up awards, won the Jim Thorpe, second round draft pick by the Raiders, but just really an all everything human being too. Just an amazing young guy. And from the first time that I ever interacted with him after the Purdue game, when he came out of the old makeshift locker room and gave his first ever media interview and just had this massive smile on his face. That smile was there, win or lose. I mean, just always all grace and class and willing to talk to anybody and give people time, and an amazing representative of TCU both on and off the field, and a guy who I think is going to make us really, really proud as a professional athlete as well. So Trayvon Merrig earned it on the field, earned it off the field, and is somebody that we're going to be really glad to have supporting TCU for decades to come.
Absolutely. Trayvon Merrick has been added to my list of TCU athletes who were drafted one spot before my Dallas team in that sport drafted. You know, so he and Desmond Bain are now on that list together. It is a very short and incredibly disheartening list that I've started to compile. So
just shout here's out. A thought. Yeah, don't tie yourself too closely to any team that makes its residence in Dallas or Arlington.
That ship has long since sailed. I have no choice at this point. I have tried to disassociate, and it has gone poorly. So
hey, you got pro Wells and Shaywo. Maybe have a chance at making a roster in Dallas/ Arlington. So
I think Shaywo got released.
Oh, did he really? Well. Yeah. And Pro Wells is in Cincy. Our Darius Lynn, right?
Artavius Lynn.
Yeah. I'm mixing up. It's been, it's way past my bedtime.
Look, this is take two. We're doing great for take two. I would be remiss though if I didn't mention at least two more student athletes who have stood out to me in the last year. The first of which is Braden Taylor, the consensus freshman All-American third baseman for the Horned Frog baseball team, who just had an outstanding first year in the purple and white, and has already kind of made a name for himself on the national level. Kendall Rogers has raved about him multiple times over at D1 baseball. He obviously received a ton of freshman All-American awards. He's a consensus All-American, a freshman All-American, and just an outstanding kid, outstanding student athlete. So shout out to Braden Taylor for his year. And you know, it's not easy to come into a TCU baseball program and then take an older guy's starting job do so and to perform incredibly well and to just bond with the rest of the team like he has done. It's been really fun to see. And then another guy that I think needs a ton of credit for not just what he did on the field, or not even really for anything that he did on the field, mostly for what he did off the field, is Kelton Hollins. You know, he stepped up last summer in a time of incredible turmoil for our country, for our university. There was some controversy around the football team at that time. And he stepped up and said, look, there is a lot that can be done for this conversation about race that's happening right now, for all of the anger and the hatred and the vitriol that is being spewed right now. And I want to be the leader that TCU needs to move this conversation forward and to start repairing relationships. And he did that in such a graceful way and in such a strong and wise way for, you know, a 22-year-old guy to step up into that leadership role is really impressive. So I feel like anytime we're talking about impressive student athletes from here on out, we need to be talking about Kelton as well.
Yeah, and it's awesome that Kelton is going to have his last year of eligibility at Louisiana Tech, go back home to Louisiana, where the long running, I don't even know if it's a joke, it might be real, is that he is the future governor of the boot. So we'll be somebody that will, I have a feeling, will keep an eye on here for years to come as well. So really, really lucky in the midst of an up and down season athletically for TCU that it's still so easy to just tick off names of really great human beings that just happen to play sports for the Horned Frogs. Just a lot of really quality people, both on the rosters and the coaching staffs for TCU right now. And the winning and losing matters a lot, obviously, kind of is what keeps the ball rolling. But at the end of the day, I think that we've gained a lot of perspective in the last 16 months or so, and knowing everything that these kids went through just to get a chance to entertain us and give us a couple hours of reprieve from, you know, all that was struggling around us. It's just good to know that they're as invested in representing the university as we are. So it's kind of a cool thing.
It really is. It really is cool to see. You couldn't be happier for this university at this point in time. And speaking of incredible representatives of this university, see, there's the segue that was missing the first time we did that. Speaking of student athletes, former student athletes who are representing Texas Christian University, Melissa, there are six former Frogs that are vying for gold medals in the Tokyo Olympics starting very soon.
Super cool. I think the Olympics is almost kind of feels like an afterthought at this point, but come Friday when the opening ceremonies kick off, We're all going to be glued to our televisions. And so the fact that there are six people that will be competing across multiple disciplines as former TCU Horned Frogs is really pumped. The first one that we're going to just kind of give you guys a rundown on is Amy Okonkwo, who was a really, really great basketball player for the Horned Frogs, all conference level performer from California, started her career at USC, matriculated to TCU, where she had three amazing seasons. Had a cup of coffee with the Dallas Wings, stayed local in Arlington for her, to start her professional career, and now will be over in Tokyo as a member of the Nigerian basketball team, the same program whose men's team upset Team USA just a couple of days ago. And so this is an awesome opportunity for her as someone who is vying for one of those just so few spots in women's professional basketball stateside. This is an opportunity for her to hopefully get some run and make a name for herself and get another opportunity to make it in the WNBA.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see the rise of the WNBA just publicity-wise over the last 18 months or so. The pandemic, I think, oddly helped with that a little bit, especially in this season that's going on. Or I guess, just in the middle of the season
right now. They take a month off for the Olympics. So.
Yeah, kind of like hockey used to do. Yeah. And so, I think that Amy is such a wonderful representative of TCU. I'm really excited to see what she can do with the Nigerian women in Tokyo. The next person on our list, though, is Sana Nudinen. I know you left me that name to try and pronounce.
Yeah, I put these in a very specific order and made sure I went first. I'm just saying.
Duly noted for next time. But Sana is a Finnish golfer. She represented TCU from 2010 to 2014, playing for the women's golf team at TCU. But she's been playing for Finland since before she even got on campus in 2010. She started playing for the European girls team for Finland in 2007 as a high schooler. And she represented Finland in the European Girls Championships in 2007, 2008, and 2009, actually even taking home a bronze medal in 2009. She's played on the 2010 and 2011 European Ladies Team Championship, secured bronze in 2013, silver in 2014 as team captain of that team for Finland. And so naturally now she has moved on into a similar role for her home country in Tokyo, already kind of meddled up a little bit. And so I would, if we're picking some of these folks who might win a medal, I think she's a pretty good bet to see a Horned Frog on the podium.
It would be really awesome to see her get up there. Another TCU athlete is kind of in a unique position in that he never really officially competed for TCU, and he's competing in the Olympics in a sport that will be showcased for the very first time, and that is Tom Scott, proud TCU alumni, native of Richardson, Texas, graduate of Jesuit College Prep in Dallas. He will be competing in karate. The first time we will see karate at the Olympic Games. So this is a 10-time U.S. Open champion, a 15-time national champion, 6-time Pan American champion, and a proud brother of Pi Kappa Phi at TCU. So, which I just know needles you just a little bit. So,
a little bit.
Talk about another guy that's got a great chance to make it to the podium. I think Tom Scott is high on that list. And it'll be really cool to see him make history, not only just hopefully in his competition, but just in doing something that's never been done before the Olympics. And so it'll be really fun to see how he does and what karate as an Olympic sport looks like. I just think that's going to be really cool.
You know, I took karate in middle school.
Oh, and well, you could be in the Olympics too.
I think I got all the way to like green belt. I'm just saying.
All right.
Watch your back, Tom.
Yeah, coming for you.
The next former frog that's going to be in Tokyo will be representing Great Britain. Her name is Lorraine Ugin. She was born in London, and she went to TCU from 2000 and I lost my note. 2011 to 2015, she went to the indoor NCAA Indoor Track and Field Championships in 2011 and 2012. She has been competing at the kind of global level in track and field for a long time. She qualified at the 2009 European Athletics Junior Championships and 2010 World Junior Championships. So she's been around for a little more than a decade. She is a long jumper, and she's representing Great Britain in Tokyo. Super cool.
Another field event, Horned Frog, is Derek Moklang, who actually just finished his senior season at TCU. So a recent graduate, just finished his eligibility. He is the outdoor 400 meter school record holder, the indoor 4x400 meter school record holder, and he will be competing in the 4x400 relay as a member of the South African team. Awesome. One of the certainly most fun events, something that they're looking forward to. We always look forward to watching is the speed events, and those relays are a blast. So hopefully Derek will have a great opportunity to get into the finals. I know that that's always a pretty stacked heat, and I don't know necessarily where his team is ranked coming into it, but it should be fun to watch him compete as well.
Absolutely. And then last on the list, but definitely not least, is a name that most TCU fans all TCU fans should know. That is the one and the only Ronnie Baker. He is a legend at TCU. He has been competing in track and field in the 100 meters for a long time, qualified for the Tokyo Olympics by running a personal best 9.85 seconds, which is just incomprehensible how fast of a human being you have to be to run that fast. That was good for second at the U.S. Olympic trials. And, you know, he's looking at an opportunity to claim the title of fastest man alive, which is
so cool.
Honestly, probably the most badass title anybody's ever had.
Yeah, that'd be pretty dang cool. We got a little breaking news here on the Twitter machine, Jamie. Uh-oh. I don't know if you saw this. A big, you know, as we get ready to transition to talking about Texas and Oklahoma decommitting from the Big 12, one of TCU's top cornerback recruiting options, one of their top targets at cornerback, just decommitted from the University of Texas. So Jalen Gil, I don't know how to say the last name, Gilbo. That just popped up on the timeline, retweeted by Jeremy Mockins, just throwing that out there.
Interesting. Yeah. No, he was on campus. Gullibo is, I think, how you say it.
Gullibo. His last name. Okay.
Not gullible, but Gullibo, B-E-A-U. He was on campus back in June, I believe, and really enjoyed his visit to TCU. And
yeah, top 100 player.
Be a pretty tough L for new head coach Steve Sarkisian to take right out of the gate, but it is what it is, as they say, you know.
Yeah, be a nice dub for the Horned Frogs if they could. I mean, you're talking like this dude's elite. So like as cornerback would be Jeff Gladney type, but maybe even a little bit bigger. So something to keep in mind, you know, just a little bit of information.
Would be a real bummer to see him end up in purple and white.
Real bummer. So this transitions us into the big topic of the day, and that is what feels like the impending departure from the Big 12 and the dissolution of the Longhorn Network is the University of Texas, University of Oklahoma are in talks in the early stages. They're paying for dinner and, you know, hoping that they have one too many drinks at the bar as they try to convince the SEC to take on Texas's, you know, dying carcass and Oklahoma's just outside of national championship caliber talent into the SEC, where they will make a lot of money and probably not change their fortunes on the field all that much.
Probably not. You know, you talk about the way that this is shaping up. I think it's more of a when than an if Texas and Oklahoma end up in the SEC. You've got to credit Texas A&M for kind of carving this path for the Longhorns to follow, to be mediocre and make more money. It's everybody's dream, right? A&M has perfected it for centuries now. And here Texas is saying, you know what? That seems kind of nice. Maybe we'll do it the A&M way for once.
What a good idea.
All of this goading is in an attempt to reverse psychology the University of Texas into not going to the SEC. Shouldn't have said that part, the quiet part out loud, but here we are. I really, truly think that this is more of a win than an if for Texas and Oklahoma to leave for the SEC. It makes sense monetarily. It makes sense competitively, at least for Oklahoma. And really, truly, if this is the start of kind of the building of super conferences, they're the natural two to add to get the SEC to 16 teams. I will say that there's maybe a little bit of panic from folks about this could happen in the next month, this could happen in the next 2 months, whatever it might be. right now, as it stands, the Big 12 has a grant of rights in place through 2025. And for those listening that maybe don't know what a grant of rights is, that is an agreement between the schools and the conference that they're in that allows that kind of helps the conference keep people in place. Essentially, it says that if a conference team leaves, so if Texas leaves before 2025, they owe the Big 12 a crap ton of money every single year. And that dollar amount is representative of what they would have been paid in by the conference at the end of every year. You know, we always see those charts of like every Big 12 school made $34 million, every Big 10 school made $37 million, every SEC school made $42 million, whatever it is, after all the bowl payouts and TV deals and everything else. Texas would actually owe that money to the Big 12 for an extended period of time should they leave beforehand. Now, they can potentially negotiate a buyout, but at that point, we're probably talking tens, if not
$100 million. Easily over $100 million. Yeah. I think it's safe to say it's not happening before the grants of rights deals expires, which happens to happen a year after Gary Patterson's current contract expires. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that this is something that we've seen in the works behind the scenes, and that it would not surprise me if they inform the Big 12 conference next month that they have no intention of re-signing with the league, which puts schools like TCU and Baylor and Oklahoma State and Texas Tech in pretty perilous positions long-term. You know, we can all talk about, you know, our individual successes, and Texas Tech will tell you about its barbecue championship, and Oklahoma State will tell you that they win national championships and things like wrestling and golf, which they do. And Baylor, you know, has the biggest, you know, kind of carrot they can dangle right now with the recent men's basketball championship. But at the end of the day, these grants of rights deals, these TV deals are built on football and mostly football. So none of those four schools is really in any great position, let alone the schools like Kansas State and Kansas, to be super attractive to the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the ACC right now. There's some natural, I think, kind of geographical things that make sense. Iowa State to the Big Ten, West Virginia to the ACC, but there are going to be a lot of schools that if they don't find a backup plan here quickly are going to be in really bad shape come the next reorg. And the Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma, I hate to say it, but it dies. It dies on the vine. Those two schools is inept as Texas has been on the field with just one 10-win season in their last 11 tries. They still are going to drive the bus of this conference alongside Oklahoma. And the fact that those two teams could be gone in 4 years is got to be pretty terrifying to athletic directors across the rest of the conference.
Well, it definitely is. You know, if I'm Jeremiah Donati, the first thing that I'm doing is I'm making every phone call possible to just have at least one, if not two or three backup plans for TCU. Because when this goes down, there will be someone who's left out in the cold. TCU has already experienced that one time, and we don't want to experience that again. We would much rather Baylor experience that or Texas Tech experience that. But the likelihood is that it's going to be kind of every school for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so you've got
Richards is not walking through that door.
And Richards is not coming through that door for you, Baylor. So just, you know, chill with all of that. But, you know, Melissa, I do want to ask you this. If you had if someone came to you, Mark Emmert, let's say, came to you, or Bob Bowlesby came to you and said, Melissa, you can pick four schools and it will save the Big 12 once Texas and Oklahoma leave. Who would those realistically? Give me two lists. Give me your pipe dream, pie in the sky list, four schools to add to the conference, and then give me your realistic, what might salvage this thing, if anything's going to salvage this thing.
I mean, if you're telling me I can pick any four schools in the country and I don't have to be real, I could be semi-realistic. I'm probably looking for established Power Five programs. Mm-hmm. I'm immediately going to the dead on the vine Pac-12. I think that, you know, we've all talked about the Arizona schools as potential expansion candidates for years now as the Pac-12 is withered. Because as bad a shape as the Big 12 feels like it's in. It's still been one of the top two or three money earners mm-hmm. for consistently over the last 7 or 8 years. So, but I'm going for Arizona, Arizona State, and I'm probably looking at Utah and Colorado next. If the Big 12 is going to expand its footprint nationally and take advantage of, you know, streaming and so many opportunities to play games, I don't want to venture east. I want to stay away from the SEC and the ACC, and I want to start building out an audience westward. It might not make sense for some of the schools. Like if the Big 12 expands to the West, then West Virginia is going to be, you know, RF, but that's probably where I'd like to see the conference go. I think more realistically, it becomes a grab who you can get, which means I think, you know, raiding the AAC. And I would hate to add Houston and SMU. I don't want to add two good programs in the state of Texas. SMU has already given TCU all they can handle, both on the field and on the recruiting trail, and doesn't look like they're going to go away anytime soon. And when you talk about what the NIL can do, is there a school that has the potential to benefit more from basically legalized boosters than SMU? No, I mean, they're gonna clean house if they want to. And if people start buying into SMU football, which it looks like they're on their way to doing, that's not great for TCU from a recruiting standpoint. But you know, you grab Houston, you grab SMU, you build some nice regional rivalries. And I think you go to Cincinnati and Memphis. Those would be, I think that would be the most likely pitch that we would get. You also wonder though too, how many of those schools are going to hold a grudge for the way they've been treated by the Big 12 when they've tried to get in time and time again, and have been told they're not good enough. And all of a sudden it's, oh, we are in a real bad spot. Hey guys, come bail water for us. And maybe, I mean, you take the money if the money's offered, but if that conference doesn't look stable, be interesting to see how that plays out.
I totally agree. Yeah. I think it's going to be a really interesting scenario that we can't quite predict. I think for me, my pipe dream would be to wind the clock back to 2011 when the Big 12 was courting TCU and West Virginia. And I would go ahead and tack on four more schools with, you know, the presumption that Texas and Oklahoma are also out the door. Those schools would be Florida, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia. Clemson and Virginia. I'm going full East Coast. We have an East division now for our good friends, Western Virginia. They get a rivalry back with Virginia. They get another rivalry back with Clemson. They get to play the Florida schools every year now, which who doesn't want to play Florida man twice a year or host them in their home
and
stadium?
Recruiting. Yeah.
And recruiting, you know, that's a fertile recruiting ground.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, that stabilizes the Big 12 recruiting in Texas to say, look, you're going to have Florida coming in. You're going to go to Clemson every other year. You're going to be playing recent national champions. You know, I think that would bolster the profile of the conference enough. This is the pipe dream. This is the pipe dream.
This realignment's not even getting approved in NCAA 14. Like, you're not even getting this through a video game.
No, but we're talking pipe dreams. We're talking pipe dreams. Realistically,
like, you've been hitting the pipe as you make this dream. That's what that sounds like. So
I play the fifth, but I will say this, my realistic four would be Memphis and Cincinnati. I just think regionally they make sense. Profile-wise, they make sense. That also devalues the AAC, which if all of this stuff happens and starts to happen over time and the Big 12 is fading, there's going to be another conference that kind of rises up, and it's going to be the AAC at this point. So anything you can do to devalue them benefits the Big 12 in the long haul. So we're talking Memphis, we're talking Cincinnati, and we're talking the directional Florida schools, Central and South. You know, if you want to move in that direction, which I think going towards the East Coast would be better in the benefit of the Big 12 than going to the West Coast, simply from a media standpoint and from the amount of attention that schools in the East Coast get versus schools on the West Coast. I think if you want to get into Florida, those are two huge state schools. Both have had recent success, and that puts you in a decent position, I think, to not completely fade into the background.
I mean, I think that you know, we're going to have two-ish years probably to talk about where this ends up. But I think in the immediate future, when this becomes official, if you're a TCU fan, if you're a Baylor fan, first of all, if you're a Baylor fan, I have so many questions for you. But if you're a fan of one of these beyond a second tier compared to Oklahoma and Texas, when it comes to just how you're viewed financially and nationally, that this becomes a highly concerning event. And if you're TCU, who has been hurt before, and just recently, after, you know, decades of toiling, made it to the big table right ahead of a 12 team expansion, that's gotta feel like a big giant punch in the gut. And for those people that are, you know, that are well aware that Chris Del Conte is pulling the strings and orchestrating this thing behind the scenes, he's going to take the meeting with his protege, JD, but he's, as soon as he closed the door, he's going to, you know, take a sip of some very, very fine cognac and say, maybe next time, kid. And that's going to be the end of that. Two quotes I want to drop in here before we move on. Number one, you know, that this, nobody is stewing more about all of this than Texas A&M. I mean, nobody is more unhappy about this than the Aggies, and they have made it very, very clear. And part of that, like, it's not worth it, but it's almost worth it coming to fruition just to see the meltdown in College Station. It would be Chernobyl level, like just disastrous, disastrous meltdown. Rush Bjork, who is the athletic director for Texas A&M, was at Media Days, said this point blank, we want to be the only SEC program in the state of Texas. There's a reason why Texas A&M left the Big 12, to be standalone, to have our own identity. So if Texas comes following them to the SEC, it is going to be the temper tantrum that will be emanating from College Station is going to be just unbelievable. I cannot wait to see how that turns out. And then Stuart Mandel, I think, had the tweet of the day on all of this year, not too long ago. It's kind of wild that the Big 12's continued existence keeps hinging on the whims of a school that's won the conference three times in 25 years.
Boom.
That's only one more than Nebraska, which last won the Big 12 in 1999 and left in 2010.
I love you, Stuart.
And yet, here we are.
Here's the thing. So, Melissa, I want you to close your eyes for a minute.
Okay.
I want you to picture in your mind a conference room, a robust, beautiful, dark wood leather chair, leather bound books, conference room, all of these big official people from the SEC schools are gathered around this expansive long oak table. There is a, you know, the traditional three conference call phones on the table as well. And at the end, we'll call it the foot, at the foot of one of those tables is Chris Del Conte, and he's talking to these SEC colleagues of his, and he's saying, hey, just want to run one thing past you guys. The Big 12 didn't have a problem with it. I'm sure you won't either. Could you make sure to make horns down a personal foul 15-yard penalty? How do you think his colleagues in the SEC will respond to that when that gets brought up?
I mean, I just immediately think of Mike Leach like giving him a raspberry, right? Like, that's just the first thing that happened. Just a, you know, like
that immediately. Ed O just takes his shirt off and throws it at him.
Yeah.
Nick Saban slaps his Coca-Cola off of his side of the table and just walks out of the room.
It would be.
Texas fans are going to find out if they go to the SEC. Yeah. They're going to find out how green that grass actually is.
And like, I'm gonna say, and I don't think it's hyperbolic, that the competition level isn't gonna jump up that much. You know, I mean, you're looking how many programs after 2025, if let's say Nick Saban isn't a zombie and that he will eventually have to retire from coaching. I haven't proven that he will, but let's say he does. I mean, the man's in his 60s, you know, or 70s, maybe. Mm-hmm. He might be like 72. How much longer is he going to do this? So at 2025, is there a single program not named Alabama and maybe Georgia that you're going, oh yeah, that's a pretty stable operation. They're going to be successful easily for the next 4 years to have the same head coach.
I mean, look, Texas, this is where I think Texas has a chance, is because they just got Sarkisian in there. He's a youngish head coach. Like he
with
said,
a spotty ass track record, but
there are some personal issues that I hope he's
not even
through,
that
right.
Not but, even that, just his coaching record. It's just
well, I think one impacts the other a little bit occasionally.
It's definitely possible.
But you know, I think.
But I would say I wasn't making light of his personal issues. It's just
no, of course not.
He hasn't proven it yet. He hasn't proven that he can consistently win. And obviously, if he's taking care of his off the field stuff, then hopefully that. Would mm-hmm. give him a chance to be more successful on the field.
Except for sure.
Maybe year.
Exactly. Maybe two if they have to play A&M every year, because just right now, say the program wise, I think A&M would kick their ass. But, you know, I think, you know, if you follow kind of the same track that A&M was on, where they took their lumps really early, they got that, you know, they just essentially money whipped the head coach into coming and being their head coach. And, you know, we've seen the dividends pay off in the last 18 months of Jimbo Fisher from a recruiting standpoint, from a ranking standpoint, from an on-field performance standpoint. They are improving.
But we've got to see it in a normal year, though. And I don't want to, like, you know, you can move and mold the 2020 however you want it. But you're still talking about a team that got to 10 wins, finished fifth in a year where there were very, very few elite teams.
This is true. And COVID obviously had a huge impact. I don't want to get too far down the A&M rabbit hole here. But what I am saying is, like, there is a blueprint for how a team can grow and find a little bit of success in a very competitive league. And if anybody has the money to be able to follow that blueprint, it's Texas. I think if Oklahoma jumps in there, they're going to be competing for at least appearances in title games pretty quickly. I don't think there's any question that they would be one of the top three or four schools in the SEC right out of the gate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Alabama, and Georgia, you know.
Mm-hmm. You throw Florida in the mix there, LSU rising up every now and then.
Maybe.
But
LSU's got some problems. LSU's not in a good
position, or
off the field.
Financially, morally, ethically, all of it. They're kind of in the dumpster right now. But yeah, you know, I think Texas sees a path forward for the university in that direction.
And they just can't sit back and watch A&M take all the five-star talent, out-recruit them across the board, have success, get the money. The jealousy between these two programs is untenable. One does not get to have what the other one does not. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how this develops. But this is 100% of one sibling seeing the other sibling get something really cool for Christmas and wondering when theirs is coming. Mm-hmm. That's just reeks of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. We'll see how it all plays out in the next couple months as far as Texas and Oklahoma goes. We'll see how it plays out in the next couple years. Obviously, there will be more Frogs of War podcasts on this topic as we kind of as more news breaks around this stuff. But let's get to some Twitter questions before we wrap up this episode. Because we got a couple pretty good ones here. We already kind of talked about this one, but Lawhorn asks, assuming OU and Texas leave the Big 12, who would be the best additions to the conference?
Yeah, I mean, I think we pretty well covered that, but I'll stand by. I'd really like to see the two Arizona schools, Colorado and Utah. It'd be really, really fun to reignite that rivalry with Utah, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about bringing Colorado back, let's go ahead and talk about bringing Nebraska back. I would love to see Nebraska come back. Be
in the big yeah. Again.
Trevor Pepper asks, would TCU be better off playing in the Pac-12 or the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, I'm voting for the Pac-12 no matter what. But when you look at the academic structure of both conferences, I don't know that TCU qualifies necessarily for either. I think that they have a better argument for getting in the Pac-12 because any conference that employs Arizona State, you could talk about elite academics all you want, but we know exactly what we're doing when we get in with Arizona State. So let's not act like the Sun Devils they're not there for long, but they're there for a good time while they're there.
I've learned a lot of things the Arizona State way. I'll just say that.
Yeah, which is great. Love it.
Can be good highly educational.
Yeah,
highly educational.
Yeah, I mean look at James Harden. You know,
true.
Or maybe don't.
He has a fantastic beard. he has a fantastic beard. As much as I dislike the guy, his beard game is on point. No, I think while your argument about academics is pretty on the nose there about the Pac-12, I think I'd rather see TCU in the Big Ten simply because I think the competitive integrity of that conference is more intact than the Pac-12 is right now. You know, I would much rather see TCU playing Wisconsin and Ohio State and Penn State and Nebraska and Minnesota versus Arizona State or Colorado or, I don't know, UCLA. Cal just doesn't really do it. Cal sounds like a great.
You don't want to play in the Rose Bowl?
We already did that. And as a Big Ten.
You do it every other year?
Big Ten teams, they got the Rose Bowl connection already. Like they're.
You're going to recruit a bunch of Southern kids to go play all of their games up in the north in the snow?
Yeah. Because guess what all of those other schools have to do every other year? Come play in the heat.
Yeah.
You're going to tell parents like, hey, you're going to come in here and you're going to see your kid beat Ohio State in Fort Worth, Texas. You're going to come in here. You're going to see your kid just absolutely pantsing Penn State. You're going to see them beat Wisconsin again and again and again and again. Right. The Purdue game would no longer be a non-conference game 9 years from now. So,
you know. I will say from a places I want to watch TCU football play, I don't know that there's one in the Pac-12 that maybe Colorado because it's so pretty and we're already playing there anyways. But the traditions of the Big Ten when you talk to this elite level football fandom, it'd be pretty cool to watch TCU play in Happy Valley in a whiteout. You know,
or
the Big House or the Horseshoe. Like that's just
I didn't even mention Michigan. People really don't anymore.
Yeah, dude, I mean, who cares? Get relevant, Packies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's see. The next question comes from Clint Foster, good friend. Clint, great YouTube content, great kind of funny bits that Clint does on Twitter. If you're not following him, you should. He just tweets us a Thor GIF that says, "Where have you been?"
We've been busy, Clint. There's been a global pandemic, but but hey, we're back. We're rolling. We're good.
We're back.
It's okay.
We're back. Back now. Damp Fruit asks, "What role do you think Del Conte played in all of this realignment stuff?" I can't see a situation in where he didn't play a big role. I mean, he's the athletic director at Texas. He's been a part of those conversations. And then Linda, final question, asks, "Has the era of super conferences arrived?"
Yeah. I think we're on the precipice of this with the playoff expansion. Both the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are in really perilous positions. I think you could easily see this devolve into a four super conference going forward. And it may not even be adding a bunch of teams. It might just be, you know, saying goodbye to one of the Power Five and having a scramble to fill the gaps. But I think we're going to be looking at a very, very different landscape in college football between realignment and the TV deals, the way that we consume sports and the NIL. There are a lot of changes coming, and I think super conferences could absolutely be the way that college football tries desperately to hold on to what little power they have remaining.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Whether it takes 2 years or 10, I'm not sure for everything, for all the chips to fall.
But sure.
They've already started falling.
Yeah. Not that much. The chips are crumbling.
For sure. Well, that'll just about do it for this episode, the Triumphant Return of the Frogs War podcast. If you could, please, please, please make sure you're subscribed on Spotify or iTunes, wherever you find your podcasts, local grocery store, wherever that might be. Make sure that you're subscribed there and go ahead and leave us a review. It doesn't take long. It helps boost our profile just a little bit. And since we've been out of this game for like 18 months, we would really super duper appreciate that from you. And Melissa actually has a little bit of incentive for when we reach a nice milestone.
Yeah, we're going to, because, I want to, you know, first and foremost say that I have nothing but respect for Drew Davison of Fort Worth Star-Telegram and Jeremy Clark, which 247, and the folks, TCU 360 folks that cover. I love everybody that we get to hang out with at the press box on Saturdays and at basketball games, just a really amazing group of people. That being said, I want to kick their ass. And so I think but like in love, like with love. Like, I think we all have very different skill sets and we cover different things. But, you know, as we got ready to return, I was kind of looking at our metrics and our numbers, and I realized that we're not in a bad position. But I'd like to see some more reviews. I'd like to get pumped up on that platform. If you guys enjoy what we do, we are the only of the TCU centric, you know, coverages that offer the service for free. So that's kind of the only thing we got going for us. We're not very good, but we're cheap. And
you get what you pay for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it doesn't work in my dating life or my podcast life. But anyways, way past my bedtime. What I'm going to do is I have this pretty impressive collection of sports memorabilia. It is random stuff from all decades, all sports, college, pro, in between. So when we hit 100 reviews on iTunes, I am going to pull a random piece of sports memorabilia out of my collection and send it to a lottery chosen reviewer. I'm not going to say you have to give 5 stars to be eligible for it. I'm just saying that, like, sticky fingers are going to grab the 4 and 5 star reviews. I'm just saying. So it will be completely above board and completely random. I'm not going to just pick my friends, and I don't know what it's going to be, but I promise you, unlike what we can guarantee for this podcast, it will not suck. So we'll do this again, maybe 150, maybe 200. We'll see if it works. But I'd really like to hit that century milestone and, you know, just needle it to our friends over at their TCU-centric outlets. And we love Jeff and all those guys too. But, you know, we just want you guys to like us more. A little needy. It's true. We're a little needy over here.
It's true. We are super needy. So Melissa's going to give you some pretty cool memorabilia.
Yeah.
For
like, I mean, look, stuff. I, just within reach, I have a Yu Darvish bobblehead. Just within reach.
How about
so,
that?
So these are the types of fun things that you could end up with. We'll see. I don't know. I'm just going to randomly pull it out of the box.
You'll love to see it. You really do. But that'll do it for this episode of the Frogs War podcast. Thank you for sticking with us and listening after the, you know, second time we had to record all of this. I am Jamie Plunkett.
Melissa Treebwasser.
And we'll talk to you again next week.
Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.